We're beginning the 19th chapter of Ezekiel, and this chapter takes the illustration of a lion, or a lioness, and her whelps, and also of a broken vine to describe the deplorable and degenerate condition of the royal family of Judah. He begins in the first verse by saying, "Moreover, take up thy lamentations for the princes of Israel." Now the first thing Ezekiel is told to do is to lament, to sorrow for, to grieve for the princes of Israel. These would be the ruling people, the ruling authority, the royal family of Israel. And as we think of Ezekiel lamenting over this, it's because of the fact that they had so fallen from their position of high respect, from their position of being a faithful follower of God. They'd gotten into the condition of being mimickers of the other nations round about them. They had departed from God. They had become unholy, unrighteous, and consequently now they were to be lamented by this prophet Ezekiel. And as we think of this lamentation that's given for them, we are reminded of the fact that God did make a very strong covenant with David, that God gave very great promises to this family through David, and if they had just simply remained faithful to God, these promises would have held intact. In Psalms 89, beginning with the 20th verse, we read some about this covenant that God made with David. We're beginning with the 20th verse of Psalm 89, "And I have found David my servant, with my holy oil have I anointed him, with whom my hand shall be established, mine arm also shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not exact upon him, nor the son of wickedness afflict him. And I will beat down his foes before his face, and plague them that hate him. But my faithfulness and my mercy shall be with him, and in my name shall his horn be exalted. I will set his hand also in the sea, and his right hand in the rivers. He shall cry unto me, Thou art my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation. Also I will make him my firstborn, higher than the kings of the earth. My mercy will I give for him forevermore, and my covenant shall stand fast with him. His seed also will I make to endure forever, and his throne as the days of heaven. If his children forsake my law, and walk not in my judgments, if they break my statutes and keep not my commandments, then will I visit their transgressions with the rod, and their iniquity with the stripes." Now, beginning in the 38th verse of this same 89th chapter of Psalm, "But thou hast cast off and abhorred, thou hast been wroth with thine anointed. Thou hast made void the covenant of thy servant. Thou hast profaned his crown by casting it to the ground." So we see there how that this great covenant with David is described, and then he says that they had cast it off, they'd made it void by their actions, and so that's the condition that this house was in now. That's the condition of the royal family now. And so Ezekiel is told to take up lamentation for the princes of Israel. And then verse 2, "And say, What is thy mother? A lioness. She lay down among lions. She nourisheth her whelps among young lions." Now the mother here is really referring then to this royal family, to this ruling family of Israel, now the family that rules Judea. And this mother is described as a lioness. She has become like the other lions. She lay down among lions. That is, she has taken up the ways of the other nations round about her. She is associating with and being influenced by her peers, that is the rulers of the idolatrous and heathenistic nations. She associates with them. She lays down among the lions, and consequently then she's going to raise her young to be like these other lions. So she nourished her whelps among young lions. That is, her progeny, her offspring, then would be like these other lions. They were nourished among young lions, and consequently they took up the ways of the rulers round about them. They became like a despot. They became one that would oppress their subjects. They wanted their subjects to be their servants. They took things that they shouldn't take. They were oppressive. They were wicked in many kind of ways. They didn't mind who they hurt or what means they had to go to gain their desires and their needs and their wants. And so they were like the other kings round about them. So she nourished her whelps among young lions. Now, this passage is teaching that the environment of these rulers of Israel, as they were raised in this situation, had a definite influence upon them. They came like the other, became like the other rulers that were round about Israel, and consequently they began to act like them. And all of this was against what God wanted. It was an ungodly thing in the sight of God. Verse 3, and she brought up one of her whelps. It became a young lion. It learned to catch the prey. It devoured men. Now it's thought by the Bible scholars that the king that is spoken of here is Jehoahaz. And Jehoahaz was a king who only reigned for 3 months. He was bad. He reigned in the year 608 B.C. He was the son of Josiah. Now Josiah was among the best, if not the best, of the kings of Judah. He reigned for 31 years, from 639 to 608. And then his son, Jehoahaz, only reigned for 3 months, and he was a bad king. Matthew Henry says of Jehoahaz, he was made king and thought he was made so that he might do what he pleased and gratify his own ambition, covetousness, and revenge as he had a mind. And so he was soon master of all the arts of tyranny. He learned to catch the prey and devoured men. When he got power into his hand, all that he had before and anything disobliged him were made to feel his resentments and became a sacrifice to his rage. So we see then that Jehoahaz was a wicked king. He learned to catch the prey. He devoured men. But what became of this? It didn't last very long. He only reigned for some 3 months. Verse 4 says, the nations also heard of him. He was taken in their pit. So the nations just didn't let him continue in this very long. He was too wicked even for them. They took him in their pit, just like you'd capture a lion, and they brought him with chains unto the land of Egypt. So into Egypt, Jehoahaz was carried captive and never heard of more. This was the end, then, of his wickedness, and it's just like a lion, a young whelp that had gotten out of hand and became a killer of men, and somebody had to do something about it. They put an end to his existence. Now in verse 5, we have the story of Jehoiakim, who was the successor to Jehoahaz. He was also a wicked king. He reigned for some 11 years, from 608 to 597 B.C. Verse 5, now when she saw that she had waited and her hope was lost, then she took another of her whelps and made him a young lion. Here we're still talking about this royal family, this ruling power of Judah. When she waited to see if Jehoahaz was going to return, see if there's any chance of him coming back and resuming his power and his reign, and he didn't return. Her hope was lost, so she took another of her whelps and made him a young lion. And this is talking about Jehoiakim. He went up and down among the lions. He became a young lion and learned to catch the prey and devoured men. So this man also did very much like Jehoahaz. He went up and down among the lions. He became a young lion. He learned to catch the prey. He devoured men. And here is Mr. Henry's description of Jehoiakim. And he, instead of taking warning of his brother's fate to use his power with equity and moderation, and to seek the good of his people, trod in his brother's steps. He went up and down among the lions, that is, he consulted and conversed with those that were fierce and furious like himself, and took his measures from them, as Rehoboam took the advice of the rash and hot-headed young men. And he soon learned to catch the prey, and he devoured men. He seized his subjects' estates, fined and imprisoned them, filled his treasury by rapine and injustice, sequestrations and confiscations, fines and forfeitures, and swallowed up all that stood in his way. He had got the art of discovering what effects men had that lay concealed, and where the treasures were that they had hoarded up, and he knew their desolate places, where they hid their money and sometimes hid themselves. He knew how to find both out, and by his oppression he laid waste their cities, depopulating them by forcing the inhabitants to remove their families to some place of safety. The land was desolate, and the country villages were deserted. And though there was great plenty and a fullness of all good things, yet people quitted it all for fear of the noise of his roaring. He took a pride in making all his subjects afraid of him, as the lion makes all the beasts of the forest to tremble, and by his terrible roaring so astonished them that they fell down for fear, and having not spirit to make their escape, became an easy prey to him, as they say the lions do. He hectored and threatened and talked big and bullied people out of what they had. Thus he thought to establish his own power. And this is described further in verse 7. And he knew their desolate palaces, and he laid waste their cities, and the land was desolate, and the fullness thereof by the noise of his roaring. So he thought to establish his own power by these wicked actions. And he thought he could act like the other kings and vaunt himself and really be a great person because of this. But we see that it led to his own ruin. Verse 8 says, then the nations set against him, and on every side from the provinces, and spread their net over him, and he was taken in their pit. So here he was captured. He was taken. We read that those that came against Jehoiakim were the Syrians, the Moabites, the Ammonites, along with the Chaldeans. And the record of this is given in 2 Kings 24 and 2, and also 2 Chronicles 36 and 6. Verse 9 says, and they put him in ward in chains, and brought him to the king of Babylon, and they brought him into holes, that his voice should no more be heard upon the mountains of Israel. So he disappeared in Babylon, and he no more was allowed to come back. His voice was no more heard upon the mountains of Israel. Here he ruled so supreme. He was such a terrible, despotic ruler. He had everyone afraid of him. He was all power, it seemed. But yet, in the end, his voice was no more heard upon the mountains of Israel. He was removed from the land, just like a beast that has some kind of a disease, like rabies, has to be removed and destroyed, because all that gets in its path then are going to be badly affected. And this is what Jeremiah has to say about his downfall in Jeremiah 22, beginning with the 18th verse. Therefore thus saith the Lord concerning Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, they shall not lament for him, saying, ah, my brother, or ah, sister. They shall not lament for him, saying, ah, Lord, or ah, his glory. He shall be buried with the burial of an ass, drawn and cast forth beyond the gates of Jerusalem. So what an unhappy ending for one so mighty, for one so great, one so powerful. This young lion who could devour all in his path, buried with the burial of an ass, drawn and cast forth out of Jerusalem, no longer to be heard or heard from in his home country. Now in verse 10 we have the comparison of Jerusalem, the mother city, being represented as a vine, and as her princes like the branches of this vine. It says, thy mother, in verse 10, thy mother is like a vine in thy blood, planted by the waters. Now, in thy blood could mean the bloodline of the family that ruled over this nation. It could be the royal bloodline that came down through David. And this was the thing that had, of course, nourished this vine and given it its strength and vigor. It was planted by the waters. It had the ability to flourish and thrive and be very productive. She was fruitful and full of branches by reason of many waters. God had so blessed this family, so blessed this ruling authority, that she did bring forth all kinds of beneficial fruit and could have continued to do so if she had only remained faithful to God. Verse 11, And she had strong rods for the scepters of them that bare rule, that is, she produced branches so strong and so straight that they could be used as scepters for them that bare rule. They were suitable even for such a high use as that. And of course, the products of this ruling family were men who were very intelligent. They were very capable. They could carry out the affairs of government quite well. And they all came from this vine. This could have been such a productive, such a strong and secure and stable nation if they had only continued to follow the will of God. And of course, that same thing is true for us today. All we have to do is to be faithful to God, and we can be just as stable, just as productive, just as fruitful as was promised this nation. So she had strong rods for the scepter to them that bare rule, and her stature was exalted among the thick branches, and she appeared in her height with the multitude of her branches. So this was a vine that was very pleasant to look upon. It was very fruitful. It was healthy. It was growing. It was very verdant in its productivity, and this is the way God intended for it to be. But, of course, as we know, this vine did not remain faithful. He's talking here probably primarily about Zedekiah, who had the opportunity now to go ahead and be a productive vine, but he rebelled against Babylon, he rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, and consequently he was going to be punished for it, and the nation would cease to exist. Verse 12 says, "But she was plucked up in fury and cast down to the ground, and the east wind dried up her fruit." We can imagine some plant being just pulled up in fury, and then cast down to the ground, so that all of the dirt that might even remain on the root seems to be shaken off of it, and then the east wind dried up her fruit. Whatever was growing on this vine, whatever fruit it was producing or should have produced, was dried up. And the east wind, of course, has reference to Babylon, the force of the king of Nebuchadnezzar as he came to take his vengeance upon Zedekiah. The fruit was dried up, her strong rods were broken, and withered, the fire consumed them. So the strong rods were broken. That is, they no longer were suitable for ruling authority. They no longer were suitable for divine and royal positions. They were broken. They withered. They were inferior now, and the fire consumed them. Apparently, the fire from her own branches burning then consumed these strong rods and consumed her fruit. So verse 13 says, "And now she is planted in the wilderness, in a dry and thirsty ground." This is the transplanting of this vine into Babylon. Now there, she had no ruling authority. There she could not bear fruit, could not be really fulfilling the position that God intended for her to have. So she's planted in the wilderness in a dry and thirsty ground. She's not by the waters now. She's not full of branches by reason of many waters. She's in a dry and thirsty ground. This could also refer to the desolate land of Judea, of Israel, after all the captivity was consummated, how that it was no longer suitable for habitation. It was no longer suitable for to be the home of this ruling nation. Verse 14, "And the fire is gone out of a rod of her branches, which hath devoured her fruit, so that she hath no strong rod to be a scepter to rule." So this fire had gone out of her branches. The very same thing that consumed her branches then devoured her fruit. She could not be fruitful anymore. She had been destroyed. Her ability to bear fruit no longer existed. And so it's just like a vine that's just hanging on out here in a dry, desolate place, barely able to stay alive. The leaves are withered. No fruit is being produced. It's been burnt. It's been scorched by the dry, hot wind. And there's a high question as to whether or not it's even going to be allowed to live. So She hath no strong rod to be a scepter to rule. There was no question about her being able to rule. She didn't even have a rod to be a scepter. She didn't have anyone wise enough. She didn't have the authority, the position to rule. And this vine was just barely existing then among the other vines of the world. And so he concludes by saying, "This is a lamentation and shall be for a lamentation." We are to take this lesson to heart. We are to grieve because of it. We are to be sorry because of it. For this is the way of sin. This is the way that sin reduces the highest of the high into a position of being the lowest of the low. This is the result of, this is the product of, this is the fruit of sin. And so anytime we see a faithful person, a faithful nation, a faithful kingdom, turn from the true and living God, turn to a way that is displeasing to Him, turn to a way that's going to bring about their ruin, it's a sad thing for us. It's a lamentable thing. And we're to look upon it that way. We're to give some true credence to it, because these things that happen to these people can also happen to us in a figurative sense. We can be lost. We can be made desolate. We can be rooted up and cast to the ground and have all of our fruit withered. We can no longer have any kind of ability to rule or have any authority or to stand before our God. We can be cast out. And consequently, then, we need to be ever more closely guarding our faithfulness to God, our fidelity to His ways, our decision and resolve to not allow idolatry or the influences of paganism round about us to change us in any way. So we bring to a conclusion the 19th chapter of Ezekiel. We'll close at that point. Until next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.